This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome to Health and Living. I'm T. Xiao Yik. The process of diagnosing a cancer often involves a tissue biopsy where a sample of cells or tissues is taken for the consulting doctor to come to a concrete diagnosis. But the process can be invasive and getting the results could take several days. Today, however, we are talking about liquid biopsies, which are supposed to be less invasive and could be key in the earlier detection of cancers. So to help us understand more about the role of liquid biopsies, as well as next-generation sequencing in detecting and treating cancer, I'm speaking today to consultant clinical oncologist, Dato' Dr. Mohamad Ibrahim Abdul Wahib. How are you today, Dato' Ibrahim?
Very well, thank you. How are you?
Very well as well, Dato'. Thank you. So let's talk about the basic information about a tissue biopsy. So in the process of diagnosing a cancer, the doctor will usually take a tissue biopsy to find out more information about the patient's cancer. So can you walk us through what that process of taking a tissue biopsy is like?
Okay, great. Now, I need to be very clear and precise on this. Number one, taking a tissue biopsy to make a diagnosis is very different from doing what we call the NGS or next generation sequencing. Okay, now doing a tissue diagnosis, taking a sample from the patient's tumor or lymph node or cell tissue is actually a very essential part of making the diagnosis. What information it tells us is, it tells us the type of cancer, the aggressiveness, and we can do some basic testing, like say, for example, like breast cancer, we do like the HER2, the hormone receptor status, etc. So basically, the test we do here is called biopsy with, and sometimes we add something called immunohistocytochemistry. So it's just staining the cells, looking at the morphology or the shape and the structure of the cells and saying that, yes, this is cell coming from the breast, or yes, this is the cell coming from the lung, this is the cell coming from whatever organ, and, you know, it's a high-grade tumor or low-grade tumor, etc. Now, the other test that we will be talking today is slightly different. It is one step further. That means you've already done your basic diagnosis. We are just going one step further, looking at deciding the mutation pattern in the cell DNA and looking at potential treatment that we can use to treat that particular cancer, i.e. tailor-making our therapy towards the biological profile of that tumor.
All right. And so that further step, is that what you call next-generation sequencing?
That is correct.
All right. And so just to clarify, the next-generation sequencing, the test to look at mutation patterns in cell DNA, so that can be done even with a tissue biopsy as well?
Yes, that's correct. It can be done with a tissue biopsy. And now we are also looking at liquid biopsy.
Ah, all right. So what we have now are two different methods of biopsy. A biopsy is basically, and maybe you can explain a little bit as well, the process of getting the cells out of the body, isn't it?
Yes, correct. Okay. A biopsy means taking a sample of the tissue that we suspect may be harboring cancer cells. So basically, it's a slightly invasive procedure. It involves inserting a needle. Normally, the needle may be slightly thinner than a matchstick. You know, you have to insert that into the tumor site. So if we suspect the tumor is in the lung or in the lymph nodes, we can insert that. Sometimes we do the biopsy by removing the whole tissue out. Let's say, for example, there is a easily accessible node in the groin or in the neck, and it can do like a simple operation to remove it. We can also get tissue samples that way, but that involves a small operation removing the whole sample. Most of the time, we try to avoid operations or surgical procedure, and we can just use a needle just to get a sample. Sometimes we even use a finer needle, the needle that we use for taking blood. That we call fine needle aspiration cytology. So it's just like sucking out cells, not taking the tissue sample, just sucking out the cell just to find out whether the cell looks cancerous or not. So that's just like taking blood, mm-hmm. and that's not as invasive.
And so is that what you call a liquid biopsy, the needle?
Okay. Liquid biopsy, normally we take it from the blood because liquid biopsy, we rely on something called circulating DNA. What happens is, normally liquid biopsy we do for patients with advanced stage cancer or stage 4 cancer when there is a bulky tumor in the body and the tumor is shedding. It's what we call genetic material or DNA that may be circulating in the bloodstream. And so what with a liquid biopsy, we take a sample of the blood and we then spin down or get the sample of the circulating DNA in the blood to do the testing. So these cells are no longer in the tissue. They are shedding. Yeah, the cells are shedding the DNA, and that can be detected in the blood.
All right. So if liquid biopsies are taken for cancers where you already know that it's in an advanced stage, then what other information are you looking to get from that?
Okay, that's a very interesting point that you have pointed out. Now, we already know the diagnosis. We already know the tumor type. And normally, liquid biopsy offers looking at what we call genetic mutation or deletions, that means abnormality or defects in the DNA, yeah, that can help us identify certain treatment. So the defects that we are looking at is either mutation, point mutation, deletion, that means removing essential sort of part of the DNA material, amplification, cells that are amplified, or even fusion. There might be fusion of some of these genetic, genomic profile genes. Yeah, so we are looking at this abnormality, and we try to then tie up these defects, these genetic defects, with potential treatment that specifically targets these so-called aberrations in the DNA, this abnormality in the DNA. So we're trying to tailor-make or target the treatments towards these.
All right. So you wouldn't use a liquid biopsy in the initial diagnostic stage then?
Not strictly from the circulating DNA. Sometimes we can do like we say, taking liquid fluid from the, say, if they have a pleural effusion or you know, tumor, there's a lot of fluid in the cavity. Sometimes that harbors tumor cells. Sometimes we can do. So that's a slightly different concept. Those are looking at the cell itself, looking at the morphology or looking at the shape of the cell. So there, when we do those kind of diagnostic biopsy, we are looking at the cells. Here, we are not looking at the cells. We are looking at the genetic or the circulating DNA that these cells have shed into the blood system. So we are going, instead of looking outside, looking at the picture, we are going inside the cell. We are looking at the genetic material within these abnormal cells to make to look at the abnormality that has resulted in the growth or the uncontrollable growth of these cancer cells.
All right. And tailor make the treatment accordingly, correct. As yeah. you said. Yeah. Yes. So unfortunately, I was thinking that a liquid biopsy would be something like a blood test that could be used to diagnose cancer, which I suppose is what a lot of the utopian view perhaps would be.
Yeah. Actually, yeah, this is, you know, this is slightly different. Here we are looking at that, you know, like I say, the defect in the circulating DNA, and we're looking at the defect in the switch. There's a defective switch within the DNA. We are trying to identify that defective switch and fix that defective switch through a targeted medication. Yeah, slightly different.
All right. So let's go for a quick break. And when we come back, we'll look at what exactly takes place when you run these next generation sequencing tests, when you're looking at these genetic defects. And I know you've already mentioned we're talking about tailoring treatment. We're talking about treatment to fix the defective switches. But from a clinical perspective, from a patient's perspective, what does that actually mean for their outcomes? I'm speaking to Dato' Dr. Muhammad Ibrahim Abdul Wahid, consultant clinical oncologist, about next generation sequencing in the detection and treatment of cancer. We'll be right back on BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living. I'm T. Xiaoyik. On the line with me is Dato' Dr. Muhammad Ibrahim Abdul Wahid, consultant clinical oncologist, and we are talking about the use of next-generation sequencing tests in detecting and treating cancer, or rather in detecting genetic defects and mutations at the DNA level of cancer cells, and using that information to determine what kind of treatment would best fit that particular patient. Before the break, we actually spent some time talking about the process of getting the cancer cells and tissues out of the body in order to look further at the cellular and then down to the DNA level. So from a tissue biopsy, so that tells you things like the type of cancer, the aggressiveness of it. You could even look at the shape and structure of the cancer cells. And then the next step where we can go beyond now is the technology called next generation sequencing. Can you walk us through the process of when you run the NGS tests, how then, and perhaps we could take a common cancer like breast cancer to illustrate how you would use that to help the patient decide on the best course of treatment.
Okay. Now, I'm going to take you through the treatment. Now, the way I do this is I'm going to make an analogy. Say, you want to buy some new clothes. Okay. Now, what you can do, you have two choices. One, you can go to your shopping mall, go to your favorite shop, go to the shelf and pick whatever's available in that shop. And that particular clothes may or not be suitable for you or may or not fit you. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But you don't have a choice. That means these are what we call standard clothing that's available. So just like, you know, when you have breast cancer, you have lung cancer, you have these so-called standard therapy that have already been tried and tested. And, you know, they have certain response rate, they have certain success rate, but they can generally be from anything from about 5 to 10% to about 80 to 90%. You know, it can be very variable depending on the type of cancer. Now, the second way you can get your clothes is you can go to a tailor, you can have it custom fitted so that it fits you nicely. You can, you know, choose the type of fashion, choose the type of clothing that you want. Okay. So basically, next generation sequencing is tailoring your treatment. So what they do is they, when you have your circulating DNA, they will see the, you know, whether there are certain mutations, yeah, certain mutations that are in the cells that we can block specifically for your cancer. Now, if you have like breast cancer, if I have patients needing chemotherapy, all that 5 or 10 patients with breast cancer, I will more or less give the standard therapy off the shelf to that particular patient. But mm-hmm. if I have that same group of patients and I do next generation sequencing, I will look at their DNA and their treatment profile will vary from each patient to each patient. Their genetic defect and their profiling will be very different. And therefore, each of them may respond to different targeted drugs. So the drugs will be very much custom made for that particular cancer and that particular cancer type that these patients are suffering from. So it's more like honing down. And with such technology, if we can hone down and identify the right drug for that particular patient, generally we tend to get a much higher success rate because we can hit the nail on the head and it's, you know, bang, you know, we block those those pathways, and generally we can have a much higher rate of success compared to off-the-shelf treatment.
Right. And how does that success rate translate into outcomes for the patient in terms of survival or even a cure?
Okay. That's very important because sometimes, like I say, we hit the nail on the head. We can get very, very good outcome. I will give you an example. I had a patient who was diagnosed with lung cancer. He was checked and profiled on the tissue and we couldn't find any identifiable targets on the tissue. And what happened was he was given the standard chemo, he was given immunotherapy that failed, he was given targeted therapy that failed. So after about 5-6 treatment that failed, he eventually came to me. He was on a wheelchair, he couldn't breathe, he was having oxygen, and his lymph nodes was obviously swelling. And, you know, and I told him, I said, look, I don't have any other treatment to offer. You've gone through everything, you know. So I said, the only option I have left is maybe I'll do an NGS for you. And so he said, okay, nothing to lose. So we did the NGS testing. Mm-hmm. And 2 weeks later, lo and behold, it came back. We found a certain mutation. And I say, hey, good news. I've got a drug that I can block. And I gave him the drug, and 3 years on, he's still alive and well today. He doesn't need oxygen. Mm-hmm. You know, he comes and sees me in the clinic every 2 or 3 months for medical checkup and follow-up. And, you know, from sort of being a situation where sort of, you know, you're looking at potentially 1 or 2 months as your, you know, survival, mm-hmm. and suddenly at 3 years, you have you're still alive and well. So, you know, I've come across many situations where when you find the right targets, you give the right, and there's medications that are available, you get the right medication, it can potentially be life-saving, and you can extend life expectancy for some of these so-called terminally ill patients. They have certainly got very, very useful role. And that's why I've grown to be very sort of favorable. I like using this NGS treatment because it has helped me and my patients to come out from a very, very tight situation and provide relief and hope for some of these patients.
But would NGS testing only be done when a patient has exhausted the more standard treatments, or should it be done for all patients who come in with cancer?
Okay. Ideally, that would be the case, but obviously, it can be quite not very practical because the technology is not cheap, and so we can't do it on all. But I tend to use it. We can use it. We mainly use it for patients with advanced cancer, either as first line, second line, or if they have failed multiple treatment. So yes, you can use it. For patients, so at any point, but mainly for advanced stage cancer, not for those early stage 1, stage 2 cancer. I have not used those in that kind of situation yet.
I see. And do we know all the mutations that could lead to different types of cancers? I mean, does NGS only look for what we point it towards, if you know what I mean?
No. What happens is, like, when we do the liquid biopsy, when we draw the blood sample, we're looking at this circulating DNA. We are looking at the profile of the patient's tumor. Okay. Now, sometimes we will find mutations, and those mutations can be, like I say, life-saving. But sometimes we may not find any mutation, and that sort of situations can be quite disappointing. But then it can be very realistic to the patient. We can say, look, you know, we have not found anything useful here in your circulating DNA. Therefore, you know, there are not many treatments that might be helpful for you. So then the patient understands that this is not a good situation. And in some ways, they won't be, you know, they will be looking at palliative treatment. So, you know, in some ways, you know, doing these biopsies, this liquid biopsy, can actually help decision-making. Either you go forward with treatment or you say, look, you know, there's not much treatment option. Let's look at palliative care. Let's look at supportive care. Let's look at, you know, just trying to improve your quality of life rather than trying to seek for a cure that may not be there.
Yeah, I mean, it's a difficult conversation as well as a decision to make, isn't it? Arguably, it could be seen as, well, now I have no options left.
Yes, that can be very difficult. But then again, sometimes, you know, the truth has to be told. And the patient needs to know if there are no options left rather than living on false hope. You know, I've had patients spending hundreds and thousands of ringgit on false hope and unnecessary treatment that's not going to benefit them. All it benefits is the people who are giving the treatment because you're paying them for the treatment, but it doesn't benefit the patient. And I think that's not fair. You know, if you don't have anything to offer the patient or not much options left, then I think you have to be truthful. The patient needs to know the truth. Now, whether they accept that or they want to try something different, then it's their choice. But at least you have done your duty as a doctor to inform them that these are the limitations of treatment that we have, and you know, and they so that they know the score.
Mm. And speaking of false hope, I mean, if the NGS testing comes back with a mutation that can be targeted with certain type of therapy, there's also the fact that targeted therapy like immunotherapy is very expensive. So what happens if a patient does NGS, but then the road ahead is still, you know, very expensive treatment? How do you help them manage those expectations? What options do they have?
Okay, that's a good point. But there are two sides to this argument. Some of these treatment that may be may not be accessible to us because they are still under clinical trial, and we say, look, these are drugs that are potentially helpful, but they may not be accessible. That in that sort of situation, it's very, very difficult. But currently, now, even the drugs are not registered in Malaysia. If they are registered with the FDA and they have approval, yeah, some of these drugs, they can be given free of charge. Yeah. So say, for example, if we detect something called NTRK, NTRK fusion. Now, if I detect NTRK fusion, I can contact the drug company and I say, look, my patient has got NTRK, and the drug company will give me that drug free for that patient. Mm-hmm. You know, so there's no charge to it. So sometimes there are quite a number of drugs in the list that I can still get free for the patients if I can find a suitable mutation. Now, generally, what the NGS do is they normally test for drugs that are currently available in the market. No point. There are one or two companies that are testing for drugs that are, you know, that are still not so-called registered. So I don't use them because it's not practical. You know, when you find something and then this drug is not available. No, but you know, but some of the tests like the liquid biopsy, but like Guardant 360, they give practical solution. They tell me about the drugs that are currently available that I can use to help to treat my patients. So generally, when they recommend something, I will be able to access those drugs.
You know, in the case of the drug company providing these treatments for free, how many patients would they be able to offer it on this basis, under this kind of scheme?
Actually, as long as they have the mutation, it's available. You know, I've got quite a number of patients who are on, you know, like for lung cancer, I've got a drug that targets EGFR. I've got about almost 15, 20 patients, and that's me alone, you know. And what about all the other doctors in Malaysia? You know, they are, as long as the drug is available, or even though it's not registered, especially if it's not registered in Malaysia, we can have access to these drugs. It's just knowing which drugs are accessible from which company and getting the right targets. That's why I find it very, very useful to do this liquid biopsy, because then I can look for these targets and I know which company offers this drug, and I actively try and see if I can help the patient by accessing some of these so-called new state-of-the-art drugs to help them with their managing their cancers.
So obviously one limitation of NGS would be, well, if there is no therapy to go with the mutation that has been discovered, would there be any other limitations to the use of NGS tests in cancer treatment?
I think that is the main issue, is that sometimes we can't give good news all the time. Sometimes, you know, the news is not very good because through the fault of anybody, but it's just that you don't have that particular mutation, and we don't have the drug technology to target. Which, you know, you may have some other mutation, but we may not have the technology to target those mutations yet. We don't have the drug technology to target those mutations. So you know, those, we know that they have a mutation, but we don't have a solution. So sometimes that can be the challenging part.
How do we address, ensuring we can increase access so that there's wider use of NGS tests, you know, things like the cost of it?
The cost, it's difficult to answer because it can be variable from companies to companies, hospital to hospital, so it can range quite widely. Sometimes you can just cone down to just doing a certain mutations to cut down your cost and all that. But you also have to look at cost versus the lives that you can save. You know, so sometimes, you know, spending that little bit of money, and like I told you, this particular patient with lung cancer, and there was like no hope left. And suddenly it opened up a huge opportunity, and he's still alive. Now, how do I then calculate the cost for this particular patient, you know, when his life has been sort of extended for over 3 years, you know? So we have to look at, you know, yes, looking at cost in one aspect, but, you know, looking at life safe for that cost that you invest, that is, I think, very, very difficult to measure.
What about cost in terms of public resources? Is NGS testing at all available in the public sector?
It's available in all sectors, but you have to pay for it, lah, you know, because at the moment,
so it won't be covered.
It's not covered. Sometimes it's covered by some insurance, but I think what we also need to do is to educate some of these insurance and also third-party payers, you know, on the benefit of these, because it's not currently widely available, and not widely available. It is available widely. There's so many companies offering it, but it's not widely used because I think a lot of doctors are still, you know, need to have a feel and understanding on how to use this technology. But once you use it, you know, like something like the Garden 360. Once I use it, I find it so useful that it's I try to recommend to almost all my difficult to manage stage 4 cancers, you know, because I've seen the benefits and I've seen how many lives it has helped. So I am convinced, but you know, we need to convince a lot more doctors on this technology, and also make patients aware that these are technologies that's available. You know, instead of going to some alternative medicine practitioner, and they can spend hundreds of thousands of ringgit, you know, buying all sorts of supplements and all sorts of alternative medicine and all sorts of quack medical treatment that doesn't do any good. You know, I've got one patient here who spent a lot of money just doing what I would call quack treatment, and what all he has done is made his cancer worse. You know, so I think there's also a role to educate the public on some of these new so-called technologies that they may not be aware of, that can be very, very helpful.
Okay. Just one last question, actually. Mm-hmm. You know, at the end of the day, we want to get patients as early as possible to treatment with as early stage as possible. But early detection of cancers is still a huge challenge in our country. A lot of patients still coming in at later stages. What are your thoughts on improving that?
I agree. I think early diagnosis, early treatment saves a lot of lives. You know, there are certain cancers that we can do early detection, like breast cancer, you know, mammogram, self-examination that can detect. And yet, half our patients still come with stage 4, stage 3 and stage 4 disease. Whereas in the States, in Europe, 80 to 90% of the patients come with early stage 0, stage 1, stage 2 disease. So there's a big discrepancy, and because we you know, at the moment, cancer screening and all, it's all done by volunteer, means patients come forward and do it. Whereas in some parts of the country, in Europe and US, and it's part of their health system that they have to go for screening. So that's why they're able to detect these cancers earlier. You know, even like cervical screening, cervical cancers can be detected early. But of course, there are some cancers like lung cancer, pancreatic cancer, where the cancer is right inside your body and there are no screening methods. So those are difficult to detect early stage. But all some of these common cancers that can be detected early, you know, like colon cancer, etc., you know, I think early detection screening should be part and parcel of one's health program. And if we can educate people to do that, I think we can actually improve the outcome of cancer treatment in our country.
All right. Dato' Ibrahim, do you have a final message about next-generation sequencing?
Yes, certainly. I think, you know, next-generation sequencing, NGS, especially like using things like liquid biopsy, is a game changer. You know, it has helped us to identify some difficult cancers, rare to treat cancers, and, you know, and trying to find the right drugs to match or tailor-make this patient's treatment. So I think this is something that should be, in the near future, integrated as part of our clinical management of patients with late-stage cancers.
Thank you very much, Dato' Ibrahim.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
I've been speaking to Dato' Dr. Muhammad Ibrahim Abdul Wahid, consultant clinical oncologist, about next generation sequencing in the treatment of cancer. You've been listening to Health and Living on The Big Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.